28, moved by Councilor Kekkonen, second by Councilor Zulak. Be it resolved that Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar is hereby reconvened into regular open session of Council at
6:33
p.m. Call the question. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried. Resolution 25-029, moved by Councilor Haskam, second by Councilor Ryland. Be it resolved, the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar is hereby accept the reports, recommendations, and directions arising from the closed session held January the 28th, 2025. Call the question. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried. In the spirit of reconciliation and cooperation, we wish to acknowledge the land on which we gather is the traditional territory of the Anishinaabe and the Mississauga people. Its boundaries fall within the Robinson-Huron Treaty of 1850 and the Williams Treaty of 1923. We are grateful to live here, and we thank all the generations of people who have taken care of this land for thousands of years. To honor the suffering of Indigenous people and the love and wisdom they have carried for thousands of years, we pledge to work in community and harmony with each other and the environment we inhabit, to work towards truth and reconciliation. We're back in open session, so I'll have a roll call once again.
Councillor Morley Haskam.
Councillor Nick Ryland.
Councillor Debbie Zulak.
Councillor Mike Hackman.
Clerk Administrator Carly Burton.
Deputy Clerk Mary Smith.
And Mayor David Moore. Any declarations of pecuniary and or personal interest in the general nature thereof? Hearing none. For delegations presentations, we have the Perry Sound Area Chamber of Commerce 2025 Municipal Funding Request. Chris McDonald, if you wish to come forward. And thanks for coming out. Was it dog sled, snowmobile?
I made it out. I got stuck behind a snowplow, of course. But
that's clear.
I'll be short and sweet, but thank you for having me and thank you for support last year. Dear Township of McKellar, Mayor, Council, and staff, the Prairie Sound Area Chamber of Commerce has been a leader in business supports, consulting, and economic development in the area for over 126 years. Covering the entire West Prairie Sound District, we represent businesses from as far north as Point of Barrel, as far east as Magdanawan, as far south as MacTier. We provide a valuable service not only to our members, but to local organizations, not-for-profits, as well as non-members and the general public within the entire area. As a business resource and consultant, we help match entrepreneurs with funding opportunities, grant programs, professional development seminars and sessions, social media advertising and marketing presence, group insurance benefit programs, and networking opportunities and connections, to name a few. We also work as a liaison between business and government to advocate for issues that our members may be facing or struggling to work through by themselves. We have helped address tourism initiatives and business opportunities this past year, and are always continuing to brainstorm, collaborate, and share ideas collectively with businesses to better tap into new economic development opportunities. We successfully help businesses find staff and even housing for their staff, and work to keep an up-to-date record of what may be available for rent in the area, and what properties may be available to lease for any businesses interested in opening here in the Perry Sound area. Our membership services department offers a great resource for individuals that wish to learn better social media and marketing skills, and we even help create campaigns and design layouts for free. We are always willing, more than willing, to invite people into our office and work with them one-on-one to address problems they may be having taking their business to the next level, pivoting their business to find new customers, or adding to their existing customer base. As we are a not-for-profit entity ourselves, we rely solely on our memberships, affinity programs, 2 to 3 fundraising events per year, and municipal contributions to help assist our annual operational costs. Our board of directors is a working board which assists with our 2 staff members in a long-term strategic plan of helping our membership, providing governance, advocacy issues, and networking events. We value our partnerships with the municipalities in our area and even have several council members sit on our advisory board of directors. Our advisory board members provide us with valuable updates, connections, and resources to their community and are a great asset to our organization to help keep us in the loop with what's happening in their municipality. As we enter our 127th year in operation, our rebuilding process has seen remarkable growth and reach within our community. We currently have over 270 active members and over 560 email subscribers. Our monthly newsletter is a valuable resource to our subscribers. This publication not only showcases upcoming events, but also a wide range of grant opportunities, funding, and funding programs. We also like to recognize new members and celebrate milestones for our existing members. We are the voice and many times the face for new businesses as they prepare to launch into the market, and we pride ourselves in helping them reach success and longevity as they build their business. As you prepare to set your 2025 budget, we ask that you consider a financial contribution of $1,120 to our nonprofit organization to help us to continue to build a strong business community, support economic development, and help provide outstanding leadership services for our members. I attached a fairness funding formula sheet to see how we came to the figure in our request. This contribution, we feel, will help continue to strengthen and grow our business community in 2025. Thank you so much for your time and consideration and continued support.
Great. Thank you. Any questions from council? So yeah, I'm certainly impressed, and that newsletter that you mentioned, I take that and put it on two different Facebook sites as well, so
great.
It's just all kinds of information in there. I see a big change in the chamber in the last couple of years, so I think it's really doing well. And I think even with McKellar, it looks to me, now I don't have the facts and figures, maybe you do, that there have been a couple more businesses than they usually were.
Yeah, I believe we picked up a couple over the past year, and it's always continuing to knock on doors and work with the businesses in the township as well. So
that was great. And I'm not speaking to the budget or the amount or anything, but I think the funding formula is an excellent thing. If we can get that from other groups too, and how you arrive at the figure, I think that's excellent. Because I know in the past it was just sort of a request for donations, whatever you can come up with, and it was all over the map who was giving what. And so I think this much fairer. Questions? Councilor Riley?
This morning was the AGM for the Chamber of Commerce, and had a meeting in town at the Friendship Center. I was there, I will acknowledge that I talked to Chris about this while I was at the meeting, is that some of the stats that were presented to the assembled group are really quite startling. I can ask you, or I can actually tell you the numbers because I've written them down, but going back to 2021, the Chamber had 155 members, and at the end of 2024, they had 270. So I don't know what that percentage is. It's pretty darn good, that's for sure. And a number of other statistics about social media, which I think is instrumental in getting new members and in enhancing the Chamber, those numbers are up consistently too. So I think those are remarkable stories. And I know, Chris, you've had a great deal to do with it, and so has Catherine, and so have others, but I just wanted to commend you on growing an organization that well. That's a real feather in your cap. So,
thank you very much. Appreciate that. I know we're in for a challenge this year.
Yeah.
We're already seeing it, but we're going to push forward and work as hard as we can to keep growing and supporting our businesses.
Councilor Kagan?
Yeah, the newsletter updates are always very informative and have excellent information about businesses that are being highlighted. I can't remember if I had asked for the budget amounts that you sort of, just so that we know where this funding that you're requesting fits in with your budgetary needs,
right.
So we can see what your revenues, total revenues are, and to determine, you know, what financial need the Chamber actually has.
Right. No, I can certainly send that to you. I think Councillor Ryland may have that for the package, but I can certainly share it with the council as well. It doesn't specify exactly where these funds go, but it does go into our operational budget, which is our overhead, our staff, and just our general day-to-day operations.
Okay, thank you.
And the new location's working out, or Canadore hasn't kicked her out?
No, they haven't. They like having us there, so and I appreciate you coming to our grand opening. That was great. So yeah, it's worked out very well, and the classrooms that are there, it's a great environment for us to have some of our learning sessions that we do, and some of our board meetings and stuff like that, and gatherings, so it's worked out really well.
Great. Now we have one on Zoom. Is there any questions? Comments? No, I guess not. Well, thanks again, and as I say, it's certainly appreciate all that you've done and continue to do, and for you to come in person, that, again, that's appreciated, but we don't always get that, so, and especially on a difficult night. Councilor Ryan.
How much did we donate last year? Do you recall?
I think it was the same amount, 1,120.
Okay.
Sorry, 1,120.
Okay.
Yeah,
I so couldn't remember, but yeah.
Same.
Okay. Thank you.
Great. Well, thanks very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Let's have a resolution to prove that you were here. So. Resolution 25-030, moved by Councillor Kekkonen, second by Councillor Zulak. Be resolved, the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar does hereby receive the deputation from Chris McDonald, Executive Director of the Perry Sound Area Chamber of Commerce, requesting a municipal contribution for the Chamber of Commerce for 2025, and further that the request will be discussed at the upcoming budget meeting. Call the question, all those in favor? None opposed? Carried. So we won't get an answer tonight, but once we talk budget.
Hopefully your drive home is a little faster and a little safer.
Well, so. Highways look clear, so
just before I came, I saw several actually reports of people on 124 on Facebook complaining about how blizzardy it was. Anyhow, so.
Okay, thanks, Chris. 25-031, with the Councillor Ryland, second by Councillor Haskin. Be resolved, the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar does hereby approve the minutes of the January 14th, 2025 regular meeting of Council as circulated. Any discussion of those minutes? Call the question. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried. Resolution 25-032, moved by Councillor Kekkonen, second by Councillor Zulak. Be it resolved, the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar has hereby received the minutes of the January the 11th, 2024, February the 8th, 2024, March 14th, 2024, April 11th, 2024, May 9th, 2024, June 13th, 2024, September the 12th, 2024, October the 10th, 2024, and November the 14th, 2024, meetings of the District of Perry Sound Social Services Administration Board for information purposes. Now, I hesitate, but any question those minutes? Any discussion? Just a few there. I guess that is the question, the overall question. Why are we getting them all at once and not monthly? Or, and I guess our representative, we have two of them.
That does seem to be like 12 months of minutes, although not every month is represented, I guess. But
yeah, they were sent all at once,
okay.
But we can continually look on DSAB's website and just pull them off monthly like I do with the planning board.
It is a lot, so.
Any further discussion? Call the question. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried. Staff reports. And resolution 25-033, moved by Councillor Haskin, second by Councillor Ryland. Be resolved, the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar hereby received report T-01-2025 tax arrears status as of December 31st, 2024, from Treasurer Roshan Cantilla for information purposes, and further directs the Treasurer to engage Real Tax to initiate the tax sale process for the four properties with the highest outstanding tax arrears, as identified in the aforementioned report. Discussion? Councillor Kekkonen?
I'm just wondering if we could get a summary of the last 10 years, just to see what the trend is like, because when I'm looking at the February 8th, 2022, tax arrears report, at that time, there were 396 properties in arrears, and now we're at 450. And I don't ever recall just thinking back at any discussions of tax arrears, I believe somehow that the number might have been around 100, and only one or two in a position of tax sale. So I just, if we could get a summary of the last 10 years so we can be a little bit prepared if this is a trend for something, because that's a quarter of our tax base. Like, that's significant. You know, if it's a couple of percent, but when it's 25% of your tax base, that's a pretty serious concern.
And it's hard to know what the reasoning behind it is. It could be cost of living, it could be any number of things. I talked to one person, this is a few years back, it's the last tax, in a sense, that person pays. He lets it go for the 2-3 years, and then decides that, okay, I don't want to go up for tax sale, so I'll pay it. But it's not one of the first things that they deal with. So it'd be interesting to know the reasons behind the number of increases, but whether we can do anything about it or not, as you say, after a certain period of time, I know it's 3 years, 4 years, mm-hmm. You can start the tax sale process. For the others, it may just be that they don't have the money. There's, in a sense, compared to other taxes that they owe, there's a loophole, in a sense. You can go for a couple of years without paying, so they might take advantage of that too. So I'm not sure, it'd be good to know the numbers, but I think we have to delve even deeper and find out why they're not paying the taxes.
So yeah, I think just being able to see what the trend is over the last 10 years to determine, you know, is this something that economically, you know, municipalities should be concerned about? Because you sort of wonder as well, how many people have mortgages, and the mortgage company usually pays the taxes. So are these all 450 people that don't have mortgages? Or is their mortgage company not paying the taxes? Like, so what's going on behind the scenes here? And I think if we can see the last 10 years, if it was hovering around 100, maybe a little more than 100, all of a sudden it starts spiking to 200, 300, 400, then it's like, whoa, what's going on here?
What's our interest rate set at now? Is it 1% per month, or
1.25?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, that's fairly high. There's no doubt some people invest their money, you know, and they say, well, I'm making more holding on my money than I am paying my bills. Some people are like that, but can't see them holding back on paying the, well, that would be about 15% approximately. Okay. More.
Councilor Ryan?
What's disturbing to me is on the page isn't number, but the third page, which gives us a breakdown between this year and last year, is that our dollar amount of arrears has increased 19.5%. I don't know the number of accounts. I mean, I agree with Mike that it would be good to look at this with some consistent information. 10 years is a long time, but I mean, I think it would be instructive. And also to have 14.76% of our tax base, of our levy, outstanding. I mean, that's significant. If somebody said, well, run your household, but we'll take all that money back from you, and Mina, I don't think that's very difficult for people to understand. If we don't have it, well, I guess we can spend it, but not wisely anyhow. So it would be worthwhile doing it. I mean, I would like to see on that page, on what's page 3, I mean, I've got some highlights on here, but also the number of I was going to call them accounts, number of taxpayers, I guess, number of roles that affects too, because that would give us another dimension that we don't see. But I mean, $614,000 is a big change, and I think we probably saw a bigger change in that this year than we may have ever seen. And that's disturbing, because it's not a good trend. We're not going the right direction. So
it's funny, because that's a lot of them they pay a lot in taxes, so their homes are worth in excess of $1 million. You know, there's so many of them, even. It's bad bookkeeping, or I like to say, if they just receive it in the mail, it gets onto the bottom of the pile probably a lot of times too. And whether we look at the different, another way of billing people, well, we're going to be looking at that, I guess. Sending taxes out by email in the future, or other sources?
In discussion with the treasurer, we came up with a couple of different options. So we can still have the interim and the final billing, but perhaps do installments. So the interim would be 2 installments. The final would be 2 installments, breaking up the payments for smaller amounts for people to better manage. As well, we don't do reminder notices here. You get your bill and that's it. Other municipalities, they receive a reminder notice for those that hadn't paid. If we could do that by email, that would even be more beneficial. We're not there yet, but if council wants us to go in that direction, we can, but nothing would be implemented for this taxation year, but perhaps we could start to plan for 2026.
I think reminders by email would be, you would hit a lot of them, I think, rather than a piece of paper laying, you know, in a pile underneath. If they're getting, you know, what percentage of people now receive emails, pretty much that's their life kind of thing. So if all of a sudden it comes up, oh yeah, I guess I'll pay that, just like a lot of bills are now electronic. So and it's kind of too bad. It's no doubt our interest income for the township is going to be a lot higher, which is kind of a benefit for us. So I don't know how much worry we put into it, but I think notifying people is the best we can. We certainly should do that.
Councilor Kang. In 2022, there were 396 properties and tax arrears. This this report here, 2025, there was 450. The value now in 2025 is $614,000. In 2022 was $362,000. So it would really be good to see a 10-year report, because this is almost double the value, and it's only 54 properties.
It's almost saying like the additional ones are very high end, you know, tax levels.
I'm not sure, because when you look at the numbers that are provided here, it varies. You know, it's like from $200 to, you know, the average is, the properties are, you know, between $200 to $4,000 or $5,000. Like,
yeah.
It's, so it's not, we're not talking about properties that are assessed at $20,000 to $30,000. These are just ordinary working class people's properties.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think Dave's kind of hitting at anybody that is working and times are tough or whatever, that bill is getting slid underneath. While we've got more important things to do, there's that group, and I think there's a group that just don't pay their bills and may have all the money in the world kind of thing, and unfortunately there's probably people with addictions, and it's certainly not a priority to pay their taxes. So, but I think going electronically in the future, and they'll send out monthly notices, you know, this is due, and when you start adding on the interest each time, it's like, okay, I'm going to pay it like you would all your other bills, your credit card bills, you know, you would pay them first because of the high interest.
Yeah, I'm not sure, and I don't want extra work for the staff, but compared to other municipalities, is this a trend throughout the area, not the province, just within Westbury Sound? Is this happening in other townships as well with their tax arrears, and how often are they billed? I think Whitestone has 4. Do others do that as well? Would that make it easier for certain people who can't pay it all at once, sort of thing, if they get in a... And is that more costly for the township to send it out that often? I don't know. We can do a comparison of something. But I think it would boil down to looking at what situation they're in as well. And I don't know whether they would release that to another township, but it would be interesting to see if it's just this township or it's throughout the area it's happening.
Well, we have this on our public agenda,
right.
So it's not confidential information. Even
no, for us it isn't, but I'm just saying the other townships, I don't know how they deal with it, so whether they would release that to quite often from staff to staff, they will release and talk about those things, but I guess that would have to be a council motion almost, that staff could release that to another township. The other thing is, it can have an effect on economic development, any number of things in the area, so I'm not sure if they will release too much, but I don't know whether Carly could do some sleuthing and to see if it's a trend. Is that what, again, again, we have to look at you know, what can be done about it. You can look at all the trends you want as well. It's just that the money's not coming in. And so what do we do? As I said, that loophole is there for the 2 years. That doesn't happen on most bills that they get. So is it, do we have to go as a combined, if it's the same in the area, to the government and saying that, well, we have to revisit the whole tax sale program and see if something can't be done there? Councilor Ryan.
Carly, I don't know if you know the answer to this question, but to what degree does the tax software that we have impact these issues? I mean, making it more difficult to contact people and or to generate notices and that type of thing. Do you know?
It is a big process for the treasurer to do taxation bills.
Yeah.
I can only imagine that reminder notices would be the same. So we're again looking at new tax software to make things easier and quicker.
When I spoke to Roshan about this a couple of weeks ago, he told me that in our 2025 budget, there still doesn't have money in there to buy new tax software. But and this is going way out on a limb, but I mean, possibly doing that would allow us to collect some of this, which would then cover the budget issue, right? Because this, I mean, $614,000 is a staggering amount of money to have owed to us. And it's one thing to say that interest is being charged, but interest is not being collected or they wouldn't be on this list. So that's not a very happy situation. I'm not trying to paint anybody black. I'm just saying I think we should investigate that more fully and get a good recommendation from Roshan. It seems to me, from my personal point of view, that he's afraid to bring it up in a budget context, but, you know, getting new tax software. But if we need it, we need it. And like I said, we could recover. I think the ballpark figure was something like $30,000. That's the last that I remember. It doesn't mean it's right, but I mean, if we recovered that same amount from the tax arrears, you know, we could have it pay for itself and get a lot of other benefits too. So my other point for all of council is I think that we should take a more assertive stance on using real tax if we believe that it's beneficial. And I don't think we added any new accounts in the last year, did we?
No, we just had the three.
Okay. But I mean, I went through here and highlighted the people that owe more than $10,000, and there's a heck of a lot of them. I think we should be more, I was going to say aggressive, but not aggressive, being more assertive in dealing with those and prompting them, hopefully, to pay up. And if there is people that just sit there and have the money and don't want to pay us until they absolutely have to, well, either that or maybe another consideration would be to raise the interest rate. We're able to set the interest rate ourselves, aren't we?
I don't believe so. I think that's governed by the Municipal Act.
Okay. But I mean, 15% is still 15%, and a lot more than you're earning on any investments anyhow. So, anyway.
This resolution does reference real tax. So.
But what I would like to see too is a report from Roshan on our experience with real tax to date. All right, I know there's not a lot going on, but it would still be good to have that on the record and know exactly what's going on. And secondly, well, like Mike said, I think it's very valuable if we could look at this over a longer period, 10 years, if that's valuable, and then do some analysis of that. But I mean, we also need the number of accounts. I know it's here for this year, but I'd like to see that for all those past years, if it's available. But I mean, we don't want to build, we're not trying to invent the wheel, but it would be nice if we could get that and see that too. So
the tax software that Roshan needs, he's needed it for quite a few years now.
Yes.
And because he doesn't have it, there seems to be quite a bit of manual transferring of information that he needs to do.
Yes.
I think he needs to get that software. You know, the amount of time and energy and wasting, not being as effective and efficient as possible, it just justifies purchasing and making sure that that's part of the budget this year. And that's frustrating for sure, for him probably as well, you know, not having having to do this extra work that he wouldn't have to if he had the proper software.
I mean, there's certainly an element here of cause and effect, right? I mean, that we make it difficult for ourselves, and then it becomes difficult for us because of the numbers and the dollars, right? I think we should at least look for a recommendation from him, and I think, I don't know Roshan that well, but I don't think he's afraid of asking. but I think he doesn't want to be the guy asking for money for a budget that he would benefit from, although he doesn't, we do. But so I think, you know, we should encourage him to come forward and give us some details, right? If he could come to a meeting and talk about that and give us some updated information for 10 years. Clearly there's a lot of underlying circumstances and I don't know them, but I mean, we should be asking Rashawn for that and give us a recommendation. What can we do?
Councilor Zula?
I thought at the last budget last year that we had okayed him to get the software for the tax office. I'm sure, I thought we had this conversation and it was in last budget. Am I wrong?
Yeah, no, it wasn't a part of last. That there was discussions, but it wasn't approved. I think more because he was taking it out.
Because, yeah, I thought that he was going to go ahead and get that. Because I remember us saying a lot of manual back and forth, you know, writing and everything. So we had said, go ahead and get it.
He needs to work with the IT provider to either buy another module of what we currently have or go to a whole new system. And that's something that he's going to have to sit down and demo to, you know, make sure that he's able to work with it effectively. And then if we're to go with a new software, there's huge migration costs. We have to take all the data from what we currently have and put it in the new system. So it's going to be a large figure for sure.
Like the 30,000?
No, like 80, depending. It could be even as high as over $100,000. Or Capella did theirs not long ago, and it was well over 100.
Well, I think we should get a cost. We should look into that and get a cost and, you know, what the...
And I know Al Dobson from Near North sees his Roshan's frustrations, and he's been pushing him to also look into tax software. So I think now that Roshan knows that he has council support, he'll be more willing to move forward.
This is just a technical thing for the description of the report. I noticed all the others have the year as the second, and then the, well, it's T-2025- one to be comparable to the others, whether that's just a technicality, but this one's different from the others.
Okay.
So, just don't know how you set it up.
That was my error in the resolution.
I think the agenda has it. Yeah.
Yep.
Any further discussion on this? Call the question. All those in favor? Not opposed? Carried. Resolution 25-034, moved by Councilor Pecknan, second by Councilor Zulak, be resolved that Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar hereby receives the accounts payable preliminary check run report from Treasurer Roshan Cantillo for informational purposes. Now, should that say for December 2024? Check run report. I think it was, I don't know if it was all of December.
Yes, on page 2 of 23, under transportation, on the left, under the number 81, washed granite screenings, $105,431.04. Receive the invoice until December, or
Fowler one for wash screenings, $105,000. I'm assuming we just weren't billed throughout the year, and it just came at the end of the year, and they were most likely doing a tally, and it was received late in the year as well.
You see, you wonder. I can't remember the actual. Resolution to accept it. I've noticed two big piles of sand this year rather than one. Did we get a second?
No. We got all of the sand that was tendered. Other municipalities went back on their orders, so we took everything just We didn't know what this winter was going to bring. Fowler did ask us if we wanted to take a bit of a reduction, but we opted to have it all in. Sand doesn't go bad, so we'll just move anything else that's in the yard into the dome for the remainder of the year. And we'll cut back for 2025 when we tender the wash screenings.
Mm-hmm.
We'll put a lower quantity.
I was noticing too, maybe this is something to pass on to the superintendent. I noticed there the salt itself at one point was piled within the dome, which was unusual. Usually it was added as it was put into the dome, and it was just sitting in there as pure salt. Whether there's a different approach, or this is something we can ask them, I guess, and see what was different this year. Because that was always the concern, that it can't be sitting outside with salt in it, because then it migrates into the ditches and into the lake. So there's no salt in the whatever's piled outside. It's inside the dome. And this time the salt was sitting there by itself. It seemed a little odd that how would you mix it? I'm not sure how they do it. So just a question for us.
So maybe that's why there was two piles of sand outside and then the salt was inside, whereas normally it would be one pile of salted sand in the dome,
right,
and then one outside.
Yeah, it could have been. I never looked in to see if the dome was filled with sand at any point. So.
Well, that's a good question. I sort of wondering the same thing.
Anything else with the figures there?
So, this is 6 of 23. The,
what was the number again?
Page 6 of 23, and it's 1415 on the left hand side. And it's repairs to garage roof and sand dome. So, we just put a new roof on that sand dome not too many years ago. So, what was the problem?
I believe there's plywood rotted out and some shingles needed to be replaced.
So it wasn't many years ago that we had that roof replaced. So I'm just wondering, wasn't the job, like what happened? How come it's deteriorating already at this point in time? Is there larger issues with the sand dome?
Possibly. I'll leave that for Tom to answer.
Okay. And then the information technology support to Google, was that for the Gmail?
Correct. So those charges will be stopping shortly.
So how much are we paying for the Outlook? Is that our license we have to pay for that, or is Near North Business Machines paying for it?
It's within our fully managed system, so we are billed per device, and licenses are included in that figure.
And then, do you recall, so is there going to be a monthly statement for that? Or?
Yes, yeah, the monthly bill for Near North will now increase because we've put more devices on and more programming, and then other IT purchases such as the Google one will now disappear.
I'm just curious about the dome. You said not long ago with the new roof on there.
Yes.
And the plywood's rotting out, Carly? So didn't I not put like ice and water shield over top of it when they do the domes or not? Like, wouldn't that
probably
prevent
not.
It?
Probably not. They probably wouldn't for a dome like that.
That would be crazy expensive if you did, right? But
well, maybe worth it though. Like, if
maybe
we just replace.
Although
the roof
truthfully, problem. All that's really meant to do is to stop a leak if the shingles come off, right? But you still need to replace the shingles too. So
yeah, well, you wouldn't have to replace the plywood. If
no, you're
it
right.
From
no, I don't. Yeah, that's true. That's exactly true. So,
anything else with the figures?
On page page 14 of 23, under planning and development, there was $9,150 spent for the West Bear Sound Geography Network. I'm unsure of the status of it. I know it's come up at a number of meetings we've had, but are we fully enabled on it and things now?
Fully enabled as in, like, we can view everything?
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
Yes, yeah. It's open for users. I was at a meeting last fall with the West Bear Sound Geographic Network.
Yeah.
They are going to be increasing their fees for 2026,
okay.
So we've budgeted for that. They're looking at getting back to having regular meetings because they do have a board, so
okay.
They're wanting to get back into doing that. So there may be more updates coming soon.
I think that would be useful because I think that levy has been creeping up each year, and it'd be good to see what we're getting for that. And I know they've had to do some changes because of the impact. It'd be good to see where the money is actually going. Okay, no further questions? Call the question. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried. We have resolution 25-035 from Councillor Ryan, second to Councillor Aspin. We resolve the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar hereby receives the annual Building Department report for 2024 from Chief Building Official Chris Borrello for information purposes. Discussion? Good to see a little more meat on the report this time, a little more detail, and also the historical reference. I think that's good to see.
Yeah, nice to have these extra stats in there. Quite interesting to see that the year 2015 was our highest year, 152 permits issued, and it's amazing this year was only 64 compared to quite a stretch of over 100 permits per year.
But he's suggesting, I think, in there that probably increase this year. I'm not sure where he gets that idea, but less construction.
Well, 64 was the fewest number since 1999. That's kind of on the downside, the disappointing side, but in terms of both the value of the permits and the revenue from it, it was the second highest year that we've had. So, you know, many ways to look at the same information, but and in terms of its contribution to the township, dollar-wise,
yeah.
Second highest ever. So, and it is nice to have that level of detail in here, for sure.
Yeah. Further discussion of those figures? Call the question. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried. Resolution 25-036, moved by Councillor Kekkonen, second by Councillor Zulak. Be resolved the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar hereby receives report plan, or PLN 2025-01, planning activity review for year 2024 from Clerk Administrator Charlie Britton for information purposes. Discussion? Good to have that report. I think it's something we haven't had in the past years, so certainly appreciate that. I think we're involved in many of the decisions that are being made, but we don't always keep track, I guess, and see how things developed over the year. And we get the message about the staffing, yes. Yeah.
But it's good that you pointed it out. I mean, I'm serious about that, so.
I did have a conversation with Municipal Affairs maybe a month ago now, The ministry is preparing a report regarding the Perry Sound Area Planning Board, and they're going to be presenting it to the minister at some point this year. So we will know whether we are continuing with the planning board or what our future is there. So kind of just thinking worst case scenario, if the ministry allows Carling and McDougal to exit and the ministry doesn't allow only two municipalities to be on a planning board, what would we do? That would be at a great increased cost to our residents, because now we would have to put more to our third-party planner. As for timing, I'm not sure how quickly we'll be able to move things. I would be the primary staff member dealing with these consent applications. They would be coming to council as soon as possible. I don't know how many we'll get for, you know, there definitely was a influx of them in 2022, and it has kind of decreased since then. If we were to have another influx, I'm not sure how quickly the municipality would be able to push them out, other than the planning board, who's that? That's their primary function, is to get these applications out. So it'll be interesting to see what the decision is in the future.
You know, it's interesting to note as well that Whitestone has supported McKellar. I mean, they voted against both McDougal and Carling leaving. If the ministry pays any attention to that, two members of the planning board out of the four have said that we should stay the way we are. And but I don't know, unless you say it would be up to the ministry to make the call on it. It's interesting because years back, in 1990 or so, they forced us into planning boards. They didn't want the standalone. We had to get the official plan. We had to join the it was a type of board that they set up through the province. We were lumped in with some on the east side as well, the northeast. And so we had meetings in Sunridge and then down in Township of Perry as well. And that didn't last a couple of years, I think. That's all. And then we were trying to get into the planning board at the time. So we fought tooth and nail to do that. We went through the official plan, did everything that was necessary. We had to get approval from the east side to leave their group, approval from Perry Sound Planning Board to join them, and we were representing Hagerman at the time too, and it finally materialized. We joined the Perry Sound Board. So to lose it, you know, I really hate the thought of going back to what we were through before.
So then the municipalities, like the ones that are leaving, they already have their own planners, and so everything would be just going directly in-house to the planner, and so we would be in the same situation.
I'm not sure because, again, there was a rumor that McDougal had a planner, but now they don't, so I don't know whether they do or not. And to me, that would be a deciding factor as well, yeah.
So
but I think the other thing, too, that Carly had mentioned, that we'll be speaking to municipal affairs, I guess, about doing our own OPAs. So if that comes about, maybe they will be looking at more individual approaches to planning as opposed to groups. I don't know.
So I did get a response from them when I sent the resolution forward. Due to staffing issues, they are unable to attend, but they are doing a report and going to forward that to council regarding OPAs. They had been very positive, basically saying once that we adopt our new official plan, then we will all automatically have that authority. Because our new official plan will align with the current provincial policy statement. So more information to come in that report from the ministry.
That's interesting because, of course, if it hinges on the approval and the number of changes that municipal affairs might want to see in the official plan, one of them being that 2024 has just passed, I think, with TPS, so or at least it's in the works. And we were just looking at 2021? So that will have to be incorporated too, and I don't think it was in any of Jackson's plans or comments so far. But again, the PPS doesn't change an awful lot, I don't think, from year to year. They're probably little things there. They're putting in more for building of homes, I think, and certain areas to concentrate on provincial government. But generally, I think the basis, the foundation stays somewhat the same. So it might not be a great change for John to incorporate some of those. And I always found it useful, too. I know it's probably not as useful for the individual, the applicant, looking for something, but it changes so often at the provincial level, the different policies, that we just reference the various policies rather than try to repeat what those policies say, because they keep changing and then your official plan's out of date. And that's why I think Jackson had said it a couple times, we just do the appropriate ministry rather than actually say Ministry of Forestry or something else, because that changes.
So for the municipalities that have their own planner and don't belong to the planning board, so when an applicant comes in with whatever planning application that they're putting forward, they're paying the full cost of the planner. Currently we're paying into the planning board as a municipality, and the applicants aren't directly paying for all of the planning costs. Like if you look at our budget, we have a certain amount that goes to the planning board that we're paying to the planning board annually, but we don't recoup that from all the applicants through their applications. Like it's the expenditure for the planning board doesn't have revenue on the other side. So do the other municipalities, whatever costs are associated with all planning applications gets billed directly, so the other taxpayers aren't subsidizing the planning application process? Or?
Yeah, that's a good question, because the planner's in-house. I would have to assume that their fees, the non-refundable fee, would be much higher, but that's only my assumption. I will look into that, because, yeah, that's an interesting point.
So instead of the applicant paying $750 to the planning board, they'd be paying it to the township, right?
Township plus whatever.
All the other stuff. They would normally pay to the planning board, right? We pay to the planning board, and then the applicant has to pay to the planning board for certain things too, right?
Right, that's it.
So that would, they would be paying that to the township to cover the costs, would they not?
Yeah, whether you would come up with like an hourly figure when an application comes in, you're dealing with a person, is it done by hourly, and that's what it's going to be their fee. You know, a basic fee of a couple $1,000, okay, but it's going to vary depending on the complexity of it. But at present, there's the planning board. It's real close to the applicants, basically. They cover the cost, basically, to run the planning board. It's so close. I know each municipality does put in a small amount, but I think 20,000 altogether.
Yeah.
But there was, at least in my math, I was going to ask you when you do your planning board report, but looked to me like $37,000 surplus last year.
Yeah, I don't have it in front of me.
I don't know if that was brought up at all.
It passed. I don't think the surplus was brought up, because there are more expenses this year.
Yeah, because that would go into reserves. Was it asked how much of a reserve, total reserve? That must be getting up there substantially. And the question is, when if a couple of municipalities leave, are they entitled to a portion of that reserve or not? That'll be it.
Well, the same thing came up with the Westbury Sound Economic Development Collaborative. And I think they capped it. They just gave a little bit back to the municipality. Not necessarily, you know, an amount that we were expecting. So you're right, that would be another complication that have to be decided, but let's hope we don't have to go that route.
Yeah, there's no doubt if each I know why each municipality would rather do it on, and it's probably better for the applicants not having to have that extra layer to worry about. And I think you can feel, you know, when they go on Zoom, it's like, no, I'm going through this all again. I just dealt with the municipality. Now I'm sitting here again with this board, you know, and you have representatives on the board that are from other townships that really shouldn't have probably that much of a say on what's going on in another township kind of thing. So I think it would streamline it down. I would probably be in favor of McKellar leaving if I knew we could take care of the applicants at a somewhat of a reasonable price, and it would eliminate that layer of them also having to go to a Port Perry Sound Area Planning Board. But we would have to have staff that is competent going forward.
Yeah, there was at one point, did you tell, there was an application from Whitestone last night, and giving a right-of-way to waterfront lots, and text on minutes, and it was a recorded vote in that particular thing, but at the planning board, it passed. I'm just not sure. And you mentioned commenting on other townships. Quite often, you do defer to the other townships and what they've already decided through their conditions. So I haven't seen too often where we've actually gone against another township. So, but yeah, it would streamline, I think, for the applicant. I'm just not sure if each township can afford to do it on its own.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, if a staff, your own staff can't do it, well, then yeah, you're going to subcontract it out to somebody that can. You know, yeah, what's that going to cost?
Yeah.
But that's obviously stuff we'll have to find out going forward.
Any further discussion? Call on the question, all those in favor? None opposed, carried. And resolution 25-037, moved by Councillor Haskin, second by Councillor Ryland. We resolve the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar hereby received report NIN-2025-01, draft request for proposal to conduct a pay equity review and update the Township's human resources policy from Clerk Administrator Carter Britton, and further that staff be directed to issue the request for proposal to solicit bids from qualified consultants and subsequently prepare a comprehensive report evaluating the proposals, enabling Council to make an informed decision on the appropriate course of action. Discussion? Maybe our discussion will start with Carla.
Sure. Just settling into the clerk's role, I discovered that we haven't been compliant with the Pay Equity Act. Our last review dates back to 1990, so we have 35 years of historical data, which seems like a big task, but at the same point, the township does not have that many roles within it, so bringing us back to compliance, we would just have to figure out what changes were made within the last 35 years. So within the Pay Equity Act, municipalities must identify different job classes within the municipality and determine whether the job class is predominantly male or female. And then a value is assigned to that job class. And then you have to compare the male and female dominated job classes to ensure they have equal value. So for instance, an administrative assistant versus a transfer station attendant is usually on the same value. So a consultant would come in, review the job descriptions, and place a value on each job, and then find the male and female comparators and make a pay equity review with that information. What I've been told from a consultant is that you can't start from present and move backwards. You have to go from the past and bring yourself up to present, because if a staff member who is, if a previous employee comes and says they have a claim under the Pay Equity Act, the municipality would have to go back and potentially reimburse them for that period of time they worked. So that in itself is a big task, and then council's been working on the human resources policy, which has been moving forward. At this currently, council would be looking at it again. I didn't know whether if a pay equity review and the human resources could all go hand in hand, because the consultant would be doing the job descriptions, and then they're kind of just two documents that are tied together. So that's what my proposal, not to say that council has to go with that. If you just want to deal with pay equity separate from HR, put them together, or a different way you'd like to proceed.
I think with the HR, we're almost there. And quite a few references in the HR now refer to the Employment Standards Act. And so, as I mentioned before, with the official plan, that it refers to different acts. Rather than spell out exactly what the Employment Standards Act says, I think a reference to it through our clauses is the way to go. And the reason we were held up, I think, over time is the changes in staff and the number of contracts that were written, which superseded the human resources policy. So I think we're awfully close. Some of the clauses in there, we have revised, edited somewhat some we've left in that we might want to revisit, such as the sick days. I think most have gone another route than what we've stayed with, and so we'd have to look at that in more detail. But as far as the pay equity, I went through, and I remember this way back in 1987, 8, when it all came forward, and there was a pay equity committee established, and it was difficult even then to differentiate and actually add value to, or pay a value to particular jobs and what they contributed to the municipality. And so I've seen the whole thing over the years as, I don't know, a little ephemeral. It's something you can try to put down in print, I guess, and try to compare jobs, but it's off the art. And I'm a little surprised that in today's day and age, we're still going with male-female roles. That seems to be what they're doing, and yet you see many crossing over in some of those positions. So I just have some trouble with the, and going back to 1990, that still concerns me. I'm not sure what the cost would be, and I probably don't want to hear it. But I went through the Pay Equity Act, and I would need to be convinced, I guess, that which clauses tell us that we have to go back to 1990. Because throughout, I've read the words amended, edited, new in the Act. And so I'm just wondering, we've gone from 90 until 2024 with the Act that we have in place, deficient as it may be, and I'm wondering why we have to go right back to 1990. I just need to see legislation that says we have to. You said a consultant told you that. I'd just like something a little stronger than that, I guess, that we would have to. But those are my thoughts, sir. Councilor Keckner?
From the time that I've sat on council, I haven't noticed a pay disparity between any genders. For the most part, there were people in positions for 20 years. So, going back, to 1990, well, a lot of those positions was one individual, and then when it shifted to another individual, whether male or female, the wages stayed the same, or they only adjusted based on experience. So there's never a discussion, oh, this is a female, we need to pay less, or this is a male, we need to pay them more. It was all based on years of knowledge and experience.
Based on the job itself.
Yeah. And, what concerns me here, given the substantial time, effort, and expense required, well, I think, we need to focus on ensuring that our treasurer has the accounting software that they need to do their job. There's certain places where you need to really focus, and I think that that's something that would be a major benefit, and at this point in time where we need to focus, especially when you look at the tax arrears report of 450 people in tax arrears, and I know some of those people are senior citizens.
Yeah, it would just be a couple of years ago, and I'm sure it's not just pay, but we did ask the surrounding municipalities for their positions and what they paid, and I think we were fairly comparable. Some of them, because of the size of the municipality, it was hard to compare because they were so much bigger, and some were paying more. They had more responsibilities, perhaps. But I'm just wondering, if we succeeded this long, maybe we should have had something in place to continue over the years, but since we haven't, it just concerns me going back to 1990, and as Councillor Keckerman says, I think there's going to be a compensation thing here, too. I'm not sure if we have anything on record of previous employees coming back and saying I wasn't paid enough, or my job description wasn't correct. I'm just not aware of that. No, I haven't been in council the whole time, but for much of it. And I'm just wondering why you have to go back to that date. What I see here is opening a situation where it would permit certain people to come back and say, okay, I was never paid enough, I want back pay for all of those years in that particular position. Compensation worries me, I guess, moving forward, if we start to do something like that. If we have to do a pay equity, and again, I'd like to see the legislation, and then we start from now, perhaps, trying to update from 1990. And I think I passed those along to you, those, and it was fairly brief at the time. And as I said, I had some difficulty with what the committee was coming up with even back then. So maybe things have changed, I don't know. Councilor Ryan?
Does anybody know if we ever, or maybe not ever, have recently hired people and specified a gender? And or had it exclusionary or inclusionary, I mean in the negative way? Like, is there, without asking you to spill any beans, are there staff that are dissatisfied with pay equity at the moment? Is this one of the reasons for this?
No, and that's where it doesn't come from, any of that. It's
okay.
More just to be compliant with the Pay Equity Act. In other municipalities, they continually review their job classes and ensure that, you know, the comparators are the same.
Sure.
It doesn't mean that we're going to be overcompensating anyone or increasing any job class. It's based on what you have currently, what the wage is currently, and ensuring that male and female jobs are the same.
I noticed that we mentioned organization charts in here several times. I've never seen one. Do we have one?
We have like a web graph organizational chart, basically just to say who everyone's supervisor is. It's not like a male-female comparator chart.
Okay, but that would be part of the analysis anyway. Personally speaking, from my inception on council, I found it hard to believe that when I asked for one, I was told there wasn't one.
I can provide you with some.
Don't we have one in the service delivery report?
I have an updated one. We have to provide
one. I thought I seen one.
Okay.
We have to provide one to the auditors yearly, so I can provide you an updated one if you wish.
I worked extensively with organization charts in a massive organization, and if you had the right data in there, you could do all kinds of things with it, and that formed the basis for the bank to do a market analysis of similar jobs. And obviously there's a lot of similarity between municipalities and a lot of differences too, but I mean that would kind of be an integral tool. You would do a market analysis to figure out what we're paying people is good, bad, or otherwise, and make adjustments as needed, right? But, I would like to see, is that org chart in that document, Mike, then current? That was the service delivery?
We had an updated one recently after this as well.
Okay.
But I would find it helpful because there's lots of folks I don't know, and I know I'm the new guy here, but I mean, nevertheless, lots of staff that I don't see, obviously the admin staff I do, but the public works I don't, and for the most part I don't know them at all. Wouldn't know them if they were standing in front of me. So.
Well, you have to go to the Christmas party.
Pardon?
Go to the Christmas party.
Anyway, okay.
Well, I don't know what the council wants to do at this stage. Do you want to defer it? Do you want to leave it alone or what? I'd like another crack personally at the human resources. I think we can wrap it up now that the staff seems we're a little more solidified. Unless Carly thinks there are too many things to change, but I think we're fairly close with that one. And then, as I say, each time there's a new hire situation, there's usually a new contract, which references the human resources policy. But it seems, as I said before, it seems to supersede and come up with other clauses that would take precedent.
I think if you were to try and do a review of either pay equity or the HR policy, it would naturally lead into areas on the other.
Yeah.
So it may be beneficial. Undoubtedly, it would be a cost. We'd always be doing that balancing act, but I mean, I think it would be useful to get outside expertise involved in doing these things and making adjustments where they're required, even if all they're doing is making a recommendation, which really is all they would be doing anyhow. So, but personally, I think it would be best to have them look at both within the constraints of how much money do they want. But
so
So there was nothing saying that we had to do the pay equity? It's just you thought that we should update it?
Yeah, it's very outdated, so it should be amended at least.
And do you think we could amend it ourselves, or do you think we'd have to have somebody?
That's why I reached out to a consultant, and they said to me that it's something that's kind of beyond the municipality and that it would have to be back from 1990. That is the opinion of one consultant. I hadn't reached out to others, but this one individual has 30 years experience in dealing with municipalities and their pay equity, so I can reach out to more of them to get their opinion.
Would you consider providing the service delivery report to them, to a say a vendor, not a vendor, to a consultant?
Yeah, if council wishes, that could be a part of what, if someone were to bid on the RFP, that could be a part of the package.
But this is a service report that you previous council had?
Yes, although I don't know the date of it, I never did. But
yeah, it was a previous council, and I have a few questions about that report and what they recommended. So rather than just hand it over to them, I think council should be looking at that review as well prior to, because some of the comments they made in their suggestions, I think that's where some things went off the trail, the tracks a bit, with our bylaw enforcement, with our fire department, and any number of things that were recommended in that report. And I think from what I see of the report, they just spoke to certain people. And that would bias, even they said in the report that a lot of the staff weren't available for them to comment. So I'd have to question the validity, I guess, of things in that report before we send it off to somebody.
Fair enough. It's just a question. I wasn't making a demand, so.
Well, could we tackle the human resources first and then see how we feel after that? About the HR?
Yeah, I think if we could visit again, and we've had versions, so I think it was put on the back burner because of staffing and contracts. And as I say, there's so many references now, but we've actually updated with references to the Employment Standards Act that should cover. It may not be as detailed as an HR specialist, but if it suffices, has sufficed over a couple of decades. I mean, you obviously have to update, amend with legislation, as Carly said, and make sure you're compliant. But I'm thinking it's something we could at least attempt in-house and see what we come up with. My concern, I guess, is, and we ran through this, but we are outsourcing a number of things. Maybe it's because we have, you know, small staff. There comes a point, I guess, we have to look at that too on return on investment, and whether a small municipality has to, the one size fit all, does it have to have all of the things that a large municipality may have? Can we adapt it, I guess, to our particular situation and still meet the requirements, whatever's legislated? And we ran into it with other departments. We were told it was a closed session, so won't go any further with it, but that some of the other townships have a number of people on staff in certain positions, and then they have two or three people working under them, which we don't have the advantage of here. And so I'm not sure if we can actually compare to some of the other larger municipalities and what they provide. And some of those staff too are unionized, I believe, in the surrounding areas, which this township is not. So I think that's another thing when you get into bargaining and you start comparing municipalities. So I would agree with Councilor Zulak. I think if we can take another crack at the human resources and see what we come up with. And I'll just put it out to council whether you want to pass this, in which case we probably don't need to do anything more on our part, or whether you want to defer it, or whether you want to defeat it. So I'll put it out to council.
It could be defeated and brought to the table at a later date, because if we defer it, normally you want to put a date where you're deferring it to,
right?
And we don't have that date at this point in time.
The
yeah.
Your motion.
Oh, is it? Oh, okay. Well, yeah, I would say let's vote on that motion and instead of just deferring, let's just take a vote on it. I would probably not vote in favor of it because I think it's probably a good plan for a larger municipality to make sure there is pay equity where you have, you know, 20 on the roads department and half are female, half are male. And yeah, is there a tendency there? I don't, like Mike was saying before, I don't think that's ever came into play in McKellar where, oh, well, it's a female, let's, we can pay a little less.
No.
That would just never happen. Like, that would just be so ridiculous. Not that it doesn't probably happen somewhere. But, so, yeah, as far as the pay equity, I don't think we need to even go there. But the human resources, we can review that again and see if we can work on that and successfully and come to a conclusion rather than coming to a stalemate stop. And this is and a more unfinished business kind of thing. So, yeah, I think we vote, put that motion forward, and I'll be ready to vote against it.
Any other comments? Call a question then? Anybody want a recorded vote? No? So I'll just call the question. All those in favor? All those opposed? Okay, so it's defeated. Now, there's no slight on the work you've been doing, Carly.
Yeah, you know, glad you're moving forward from here.
Resolution 25-038, moved by Councilman Deccan, second by Councilman Zulak. Be resolved, the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar hereby received report FD-2025-1, month end status update for December 2024 from Fire Chief Robert Morrison for information purposes. Discussion?
I don't know for sure you would know this, but the second paragraph that starts off with McKellar Fire Department total callouts by 911 for 2025 are, does this imply that's the plan? This
I think it's 2024.
That's what I thought too, but I thought, like, really, you're going to be that precise, you know, a year in advance? But okay, good. It jumped out and bit me when I read it, that's
sorry,
all.
Sorry, that's a typo, yeah. It's hard this time of year because you're working in two different
sure.
years.
Yeah. Okay. And I did notice that the back of that page, I mean, is page 7 of the pay equity document, because I'm reading that going.
That was just a printer error.
It's okay.
Yeah.
It's not a big deal. I just, when I got it, I'm going like, what? Where did this come from? And then saw the page 7 of 7. That was a clue. So.
Any further discussion?
I just have a question. Have you heard any more about the tower? It's gone down in price. It will be Rob will be present at Friday's budget meeting.
Okay.
So there'll be more details then. But he had said it's gone down in price, and I'm assuming that's because steel's gone down. But
oh, but they'll never.
No,
okay.
They'll never.
That's what I was wondering about. That.
Okay, thanks.
I'm glad you finished that sentence when you said it had gone down. I thought, uh oh.
I look at
in price.
One other comment that I've thought with Rob's reports, which I like, it would be beneficial if he did the same kind of thing that he gave us some history, even if it was just for the last couple of months. In other words, just giving us 1 month's worth of data doesn't let us see something that's out of trend or abnormal. And I'm not trying to make a mountain out of it, just simply a number for those things that he already gives us. Because I know he has it because it's in his previous report. But
and it's also in your previous council report. If you want to pull them all out and start.
I agree. But
I know what you're saying. It would
yeah,
be handy.
I'm not trying to make a mountainous job out of this, just simply to give us some context so that we can spot an anomaly, that's all.
Okay, call the question. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried. Resolution 25-039, moved by Councillor Ryan, second by Councillor Haslam. Be resolved, the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar does hereby receive the AMCTO conference registration package, and further, the Council does authorize Deputy Clerk Mary Smith to attend the AMCTO 2025 conference from June 9th, 2025 to June the 11th, 2025.
Discussion? Councilor Zulai?
I just was wondering, Mary, did you go through that at all? Did you see anything that you found interesting?
Yes. I don't have it in front of me, but. There's a bunch of workshops on the election, and which would be very handy. I had attended in 2023 and found it to be an informative conference.
Good. Okay. Oh, yeah, municipal elections training program.
I think also just the networking itself.
Yeah.
Just being new in the position and the networking part of it would be
good.
Yes.
Okay. That's good.
So, what's the total cost of this then?
Total cost, we would have to finalize with the book, like to get a hotel. But we can provide that. Sorry, I don't have it in front of me.
So there's the registration, which is most likely the full registration.
I had calculated it previously, and it does come within budget under the conferences line item in the administration budget, and does leave money for other staff members to attend conferences throughout the year.
So with mileage, hotel rooms, registration, add-ons, it's between $1,500 and $2,000.
Yes.
And
yes.
The budget amount for conferences for the entire year, and this is just January, is previously was $1,500 and it was increased to $2,000 in the budget?
I thought it was $3,000.
Actually, though, I think, you know, for someone in this position, just starting out in the position, I think it's a good thing for a person to go to.
Well, I just need clarification, I guess, on the distinction here. Carl, you've been to a couple different ones. Some are for the area, for the zone.
Zone, yeah.
And some are for, is it the province?
Yeah, so the conference, anyone from the province can go. The zone meetings are your individual zone. So we're zone 7. It reaches out to like a plumber, Deschanel, and it goes over to Huntsville. So I can't remember how many municipalities are in zone 7, but it's quite a few.
And how does that work? Is there a difference between deputy clerk and clerk attending these, or is it just a mixture?
It's a mixture, and treasurers and finance staff also attend both the conference and the zoning meeting.
I noticed one of the options was that cuts out the networking goal.
Yeah,
through the Zoom. And the Zoom could be for the office, my understanding, one of the options. So you could have other people on as well. You could actually have, rather than one person going, you could have two or three people on Zoom if you pay the extra. Maybe I'm misreading that. Virtual conference live stream. I guess, and you mentioned election, and I am concerned about that because the last election, I guess, it was quite a upheaval having to bring in somebody again from outside to help with it. Normally, they're done in-house. Are we going to be prepared this year, even without this conference, to have a deputy returning officer to have it all done in-house, or do we have to contract out, do you think?
No, it'll all be done in-house.
I think that's a plus, certainly, for consistency in how it's done.
too, since you mentioned elections, that it'll probably be through the Intellivote again, and is that the plan, or are there options?
No plans have been made yet.
Okay.
Election talk will begin shortly with, starting with the West Prairie Sound Clerks. They start to have meetings, just getting together and meeting about the election, then Municipal Affairs and Housing will put on workshops for the election well in advance, and also AMCTO will offer paid for courses and workshops you can go to regarding the election, but Mary and myself will be well prepared as we're going to start signing up for all the workshops and getting ready.
And shouldn't we be getting something to the township in regards to how you want to do your elections, if it's by mail or...
Yes.
That should be coming soon, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Any other comments? Councilor Kaufman?
Mary had an opportunity on May 7th spring to attend the spring 2024 workshop, Zone 7 spring workshop. So you had an opportunity to network there, did you?
Yeah.
Anyways, looking at the expenses that we have this year and the amount of tax arrears, I can't support paying close to $2,000 for one conference when there's training opportunities and information that can be provided to extensive depth, just looking at what's on the computer and researching in the courses that we're paying through AMCTO that provide extensive information. I think this is just not... in the best interest of the taxpayers' money, so I cannot support this. And I'll be asking for a recorded vote.
Is Dan Ruskin worth the price of admission? As one of the keynote speakers? See him on TV all the time. Other comments?
Was determined how much was in the budget then?
It's 3,000 now.
Oh,
it was 1,500 up until 2023. 2023 was 2,000, and last year it was raised to 3,000.
Oh, so for 2025, the proposed is 3,000.
Yes.
And you figure this will be the.
So that allows Mary to go to the MCTO conference and Roshan to go to MFOA.
Right.
And then we have a new employee that may want to attend some training or conferences, so I think we need to. I cannot support this story, that's all I need to say.
I think if we started out with this, and Councilor Zulak had asked, you mentioned elections. Is there anything else on the spot here, Mary? Anything else on that list of things that you think would be useful on the agenda?
When there's a request to attend something that's this expensive, there should be a report submitted to council so council can see if there's a return on investment, how beneficial it is, and if there's other options of getting the information and training that supposedly is at this conference. Those sessions are not that in-depth. The training that you would require for the elections is much more complex and in-depth than the short, brief session that they give at the conferences.
I think when we offered this job, we had this job posting or whatever you want to call it, we had said that we would be willing to send people for training or on courses and different things like that. And since this is Mary's first time in this position, I think it's beneficial for her to go to something like this, maybe not every year, but for the first time, I think it's beneficial, and I think we should be sending her.
This is the second one. She went to the Zone Conference last May.
May, but not
this.
This
is the AMCTO Zone Conference that gives same type of sessions.
No, this is different.
This is a lot of entertainment.
In your eyes, but maybe sometimes.
Well,
I'm not going to argue with you, Mike.
Yeah.
I'm not going to argue with you. All I know is that when we posted the job or when we talked to the individuals, we said, would you be willing to go to different courses and take more training and things like that? And I think I don't recall this expensive, this much of an expensive course before with Mary's position. So I think this is a one-time thing, and I'm fully supportive.
I'm also willing to do the virtual, like if that makes it easier and if others can attend.
Yeah, personally, I am in favor of Mary going to the conference. I believe that if staff feels that this is something one of our staff members should experience, and going forward, I want a happy, long-term staff here, so I'm going to be in favor of it.
Yeah, well, one thing to just keep in mind, too, we do, this for Councilor Zula, we are supporting the courses they're taking, I think, through the AMCTO. They're being paid for by the township.
Mm-hmm.
So that is training of some sort.
But in my experience, for myself, I didn't attend conferences in this context, but I did travel extensively, and it was the networking that you did. You met people that were in a similar situation. I learned lots of things from them, and frankly, that was more often the most value to me long-term in my career. So I, too, would support Mary going on this, and I think it's expensive, but money well spent, and again, coming back to this is what we want employees to feel is that, you know, we'll contribute to, you can call it training, and indeed it is in some way, but I think the networking thing, just getting to know others who are in their same situation, is extremely valuable. It was for me, so.
Well, I'll put in my 2 cents too. The networking, in my opinion, my experience, I wasn't in banking, I was in teaching. Overrated. I mean, I've heard that used as an argument for a number of years, a number of people on council, and we've even experienced in the past where we had to call people away from conferences because, I'm not saying anything here on the staff, but we had reports from other people who said that your representatives are not, Maury, remember some of this, are perhaps not behaving properly, and we just had some problems in the past, and I'm not saying it would ever happen again, but the networking, I don't know, it's always used, and it's, I suppose, useful, depending on, and I guess the other thing, is it's a hard thing to measure, it's networking for that individual, what is the networking worth to the township? I think that's the thing that's hard to actually measure. If the work changes, if projects change, et cetera, if it could be attributable to those meetings, I think it would be worthwhile. But just to connect the two, it's very difficult. What was actually gained to benefit the township. Anyway, don't want to belabor this. Councilor Tekkinen asked for a recorded vote.
Councilor Morley Haskin?
Yes.
Councilor Mike Kekkonen?
No.
Councilor Nick Ryland?
Yes.
Councilor Debbie Zulak?
Yes.
Mayor David Moore?
We were offered the Zoom, so I'll have to say no. So it's carried 3-2. On the unfinished business list. Anything on new business? Public notices, announcements, inquiries, reports by council members.
Oh, the library. I'm pleased to announce that the library won an award, and it's called the Joyce Cunningham
And it's for, I lost my piece of paper. Doris Cunningham Award, and it's only been given out about 5 times to County Down, Gray, and Simcoe County, and so my color has been put on the map, and it's for, you know, the renovations and the makerspace that they did and all of the input and everything they got. So Debbie Woods, the chair, and what's her name, the vice chair, have gone down to Toronto. They were going tomorrow to pick up this award, and so everybody was quite pleased.
Excellent.
Yeah, it was great. A big surprise, a really big surprise.
Any monetary value to the?
No. No monetary value. But another thing also is the Lions Club donated to gave the check to the library for the Christmas. You know how they have the box out there for the Christmas, and gave a check for $250 to the library to put towards a children's events or things in the library. So it was really, really good, and everyone in the library was pretty surprised that they received that award, and they don't know who nominated them for it, but somebody obviously did, because it's very unusual. It's a small library, and they got put on the map. So,
excellent. Well,
yeah.
That'll have to be published somehow. Maybe we'll get into the North Star.
Yes,
if
I think
we still
so.
Had one.
Yeah. Well, no, Joyce came and she took a picture, and she said it would be on Facebook. She took a picture, you know, donating the check. That was for that, for the Lions Club, donating
right.
the check. Yeah, but the other is, pretty good.
Mm.
Everybody was pretty happy about that. And then just we had a Belvedere meeting, and I won't say too much on that, but.
Actually, yeah, fill us in on
the Belvedere meeting.
Was there any response to McKellar's decision?
They weren't very happy with that. They weren't very happy with McKellar's response to not donating, not supporting the 4.5 million. They weren't too happy about that. Everyone else had supported it except for White. They were waiting on Whitestone. So, and the 22 beds is moving along. They're just going to go to tender as soon as they get the final cost. It's going to go to tender, and everything seems great with that. So, other than that.
No, it's just tied in with that too. I was looking at Whitestone's minutes and.
Did you hear it?
They didn't even give back the money yet. They just took it for information purposes, the 40-some thousand.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So, and they certainly haven't even dealt with the life lease and the 22-bed resolution. So.
Oh, okay, yeah. No, the line of credit, the 4.5 million, that everybody else for the returning the money, I think everybody has done that except for Whitestone, and just the line of credit, they were a little confused. That's about it.
I'm glad to hear the Lions give a donation to the library, because they're actually coming to the rec meeting on Thursday, so hopefully they still have that in mind.
Yeah. Well, you know, apparently they have 33 families in Whitestone and McKellar combined, that during Christmas, you know, they gave toys to the kids and different things.
Yeah.
So they really, really appreciated McKellar, you know, having the box there.
Yeah, I volunteered to do a delivery on that kind of thing. It was to a family in McKellar, and it's such a wonderful cause, to help out, in this case, a young family trying to get through, and I didn't have all the money for food and gifts for the children. The packages that were supplied to these families was phenomenal.
Nice, right?
Yeah.
Really, it's nice when you see something like that.
No, they've been really working hard. They've joined with the church, too, for the Tree of Warmth. So they collect mitts, socks, and hats, I think. And they put all that together now. So it takes it out of the church's hands. Well, the church does collect some, but then it's turned over to them, and then they put it in these packages, too, I guess, for needy people, and goes from there. So they're in charge of it, which is good. They've taken on different responsibilities, the Lions Club,
Mm-hmm.
And they're actually having a get together. I think it's been advertised, trying to drum up more volunteers.
Yeah, they struggle to get the volunteers out too, like most.
Yeah.
People do.
Any other committee reports?
Go ahead, Councillor Gackett. So on Thursday, January the 16th, there was a Westbury Sound OPP Detachment Board meeting. And previously we had discussed the public appointments. There's two public appointments from the communities. And so now it's going to be put in the hands of two or three clerk administrators, CAOs, to make that selection. Have you heard anything about that, Carly?
I was asked if I wanted to be part of the committee in December, but no, other than that, there hasn't been an update. Lori West said that they had received a lot of applications and that a formal process was lacking, but I hadn't heard who the two individuals were.
So I wasn't sure exactly how they were going to select the two or three clerk administrators, CEOs. So I thought that after the January 16th meeting, there would be an email sent out to
No. There's a CAO meeting on February 13th. There may be more information provided then.
Well, it's interesting. I think it's something we have to look at as well. A lot is expected of the clerk administrator and the CAOs and what they've been involved in as decision makers, really. The pool is the example that comes to mind. They were pretty well got together with the steering committee, and that's how decisions were made, which was a bit concerning because they're unelected, non-elected people. And I know when the collaborative was turned over to CAOs to come up with a report, funding, and now they're being asked to do this as well. It's just a bit concerning, I guess, with all of the work they've got to do in their own municipalities, and now they're called in to make decisions. I'm not sure about the board itself, Councillor Keckinen, and how it's organized. I'm just not sure if that was the best plan to do. Like you say, we don't even know how those CAOs were chosen, if they had been. And the ones who are going to make the decision, or maybe shortlist or whatever they're going to come up with, it seems to be taken out of the hands of those people who are responsible to ratepayers and decisions. However, that seems to be the way that the boards generally are operating when we get together as a group. And maybe it's because they're full-time employees and they have the time to, and they have meetings to get together, and councils just can't get together like that as large groups. But it's a bit concerning that it's been delegated in a sense to certain people, and then that's the decision that's agreed to by the group. However,
I'm wondering if there is a discussion at the CEO's meeting if they can give you the list of applicants.
Yeah,
and then because the CEOs are going to be giving a recommendation of who the two people are, then at least council can review who the applicants were. And because at the final decision is by each municipality, so there has to be unanimous consensus by all of the municipalities to select these two people. And at least if we have an opportunity to see who the candidates are, then if we don't feel that those are the two most appropriate candidates, or if we have questions, then we can ask CAO. So anyways, I think that would be helpful.
Yeah, the unanimous, that's interesting, because that might be difficult to get. Just reminds me of with elections and then the different boards where we share representatives and all the lobbying that takes place at the start, and how certain board members get on there and others never do. And I'm just hoping this doesn't result in that too, that they can't agree on particular people. But it does create some animosity at times when certain things have. And we've written letters in the past, I think. DSAB in particular, where we haven't had representatives now for decades, and but decisions are made even before election sometime with lobbying, and I'm hoping your group can work it out that it's unanimous. And
well, the recommendations for who the two board members, public appointed board members, will be coming to McKellar Council, and each municipality is going to be passing the same, this would be a bylaw to appoint these two.
Oh yes, but I'm just saying, to get to that stage, to get it down to those two people, the way you worded it, I thought that we're going to come back to each township as well to select from a list of 10, say, two people.
Well, that's I just thought that for us to be able to review the list of candidates, so the council knows how many people apply for the position, but the CEOs are basically making the final decision.
Yes, as I said.
Why? Do they say why?
Just because there's a concern that the municipalities will not be able to choose the same two people.
Well, we want somebody from McKellar Township.
But as well, so the meetings have been held in McDougall at the Nobel Community Center, and so McDougall is sort of short-staffed and not able to sort of keep up with the extra workload of the board meetings. So Carling has offered to provide administrative support and Carling location. So the meetings most likely will be held in Carling going forward.
And do we have the provincial reps yet?
No.
And who pays each member attending, I guess, will be paid. So who pays for the community? Is that out of the group?
Yeah, so that'll be part of the budget expenses for the board.
So that, and then the administrator from Carling will be an expense?
Yes.
And then provincial members, who pays for them? I know we asked before, but I don't think the province will, but they might.
Is there any aspect?
Two. So there's two provincial. I believe the board pays that as well. And then insurance and then IT support. So if we budgeted $5,000, it'll probably be less than that. But if we budgeted $5,000, then we would be probably pretty safe. Maybe closer to anywhere between $2,000 and $5,000, but just to be on the safe side.
Councilor Rodney, you're
on. As you heard me say earlier, I was at the Chamber of Commerce AGM this morning, which was well attended. I didn't count, but I would guesstimate there was 30 to 35 people there, which is probably more than earlier events that I had attended. And considering the weather was really quite nasty at that particular point in time, and it was very well received. I mean, Chris and Catherine, who's the manager of member services, and another lady whose name I'm now forgetting, but doesn't matter, had really good and really interesting presentations, and frankly had some startling stats. I mean, if I started to read the level of detail that they were reporting on, in many cases going back to 2021, not all of them, but and data where they basically isn't double, but pretty darn close to doubling, that's really quite remarkable. And I had previous experience when I first moved here, long story, but they asked me if I could come in and get them some help with some things, and I did, and it was certainly in disarray would be a polite term for what I found when I got there, so that's quite remarkable, actually, and anyway, they also had a bunch of things about, Chris in particular had a bunch of things about the cruise ships coming in and things like that and some plans for the year, so I think very proactive. I know, and you heard him say that he's quite concerned about this year because of the economic downturn, and they might have to retrench and things, but certainly their results up to the end of 2024 were just outstanding in my view. So, and that's quite a change from where they have been. So I think a lot of people that care and a lot of people getting involved, and I guess a lot of members talking to other businesses and getting them to sign up too. So that's a good sign.
Is it less cruise ships this year?
No, the issue that he was bringing up was a bunch of them had to use tenders to get to the dock, right? And I don't recall the exact issue for that, but Chris said that they have resolved that now with Department of Fisheries and Oceans. I believe it was DFO that did that. And basically for the cruise ships that are expected, they can dock at the town dock because a lot of elderly people were uncomfortable getting off onto a tender because they rock and roll and move distinctly different than the cruise ship itself. When I was on my last cruise, I suppose some people might consider me elderly, but it really is unnerving when it's moving up and down like this and the cruise ship is not, and they're not in sync. So that struck me as being poignant and things, and there was a lot of effort from, I think in particular Chris, but certainly the chamber to move that forward and get permission from DFO. So that's a good sign, and it brings in a lot of people. He also said they had done some surveys of people coming off the ships and things like that and got 89 written responses, so they're planning to use that to amend other things. The comment that I recall was that customers wanted to be able to stay longer because they're typically only on shore for a couple hours, if that. I don't know how that would transpire because the cruise ship still has to get to its next port of call. But anyway, it was just lots of information. It wasn't, you know, platitudes and things like that. There was statistics out the wazoo all over the place, and that's quite impressive when I saw them. So I asked Chris after the meeting was over, can you send me your presentation so I can go through and get them right, which for what I've shared, I did. But, I mean, there was a lot more available. But that's a real feather in their cap, and I think Chris has had a great leadership position on that, too. So, anyhow.
Yeah, I think part of it was Harry Sound, the main dock there, that they'd contracted that out to other people who maintained it for whatever purpose, and it was hard for them to get it back, I guess, into their name so they could control who comes in. But it's good that they've got it resolved, yeah.
Maybe can look into that further, because wasn't it because there was dock repairs that needed to be done?
That was in the list, too.
Yeah, that I recall that from last year, that's sure. But anyhow, the gist of what I got, and I don't know, did he show anything on a slide for that? No, he did not, but he did speak to it. And his speech, unlike the one he gave us, which is a page and a half, the one he gave was 12 pages, and he read it all, so I could go back and look in there to find out the exact details. But needless to say, I think they're doing a great job. I mean, anything can be improved upon, but it's quite a remarkable turnaround in the last 4 or 5 years, I think, anyhow. So, and when I was volunteering there before, it was like, right? It was like, why did I volunteer for this? But anyhow, so.
The planning board, there wasn't any application from Keller. One thing they have, that they changed bookkeepers. I think it was more of a retirement of the previous one. And it's not a great expense. It's just a couple hours a month, apparently. And so they've decided on that, and they passed the budget. They set the meeting dates. And two of the applications, I think, from McDougal and two from Whitestone, if I recall. So none from McKellar there. Okay, have resolution 25-040, moved by Councillor Keckman, second by Councillor Zulak. Be resolved that Council of the Corporation of Township of McKellar hereby receive the consent agenda for correspondence. Anything you wish to pull from that to discuss? All the question, all those carried. None opposed, carried. Any questions, comments from public, in person, on Zoom, related to items on the agenda? Hearing none. And resolution 25-041, moved by Councillor Haskam, second by Councillor Ryland. Be it resolved, the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar is hereby give bylaw number 2025-08, being a bylaw to confirm the proceedings of Council of first and second reading, where they read a third time and passed an open Council of this 28th day of January 2025. Call the question, all those in favor? None opposed, carried. Resolution 25-042, moved by Councillor Keckman, second by Councillor Zulak. Be resolved, the Council of the Corporation of the Township of
Keller adjourn this meeting at?
8:28 PM.
To meet again on January 31st, 2025 for a special meeting of council to present the draft 2025 operating budget or at the call of the mayor.